What the EFL? It's the football podcast that pays its taxes on time, every time. On this episode, we hear from Luton boss Rob Edwards. There are more managerial appointments to discuss. We'll talk transfers and look ahead to the weekend's action. Once a week, every week, and powered by Quinbet, this is What the EFL. Hello, listener. I hope you're well. We are a little bit later than usual with you this week, but we're back and we've got a big show lined up for you today. As I mentioned, we'll hear from Rob Edwards. Fascinating chat that Adrian Clark and I had with him earlier in the week. So Clark is on board. Hello, how are you?
Yeah, morning. Yeah, it was good to speak to Rob. Enjoyed it. And then we got one or two little revelations, didn't we? So yeah, no spoiler alerts here. We'll just tease it. You got to wait until he pops up.
Yeah, well worth a listen. Really good to have Rob on the pod with us. Sam Parkin's also here. Sam, we're recording on deadline day. Have you shut Twitter down until tomorrow? It all gets a bit bonkers at this time of year, doesn't it?
Don't want to say it because it's a football podcast, clearly, but no interest, so little interest. Do you know what I do enjoy? I like, you know, just turning the telly on a week's time and seeing that Paul Kitson now plays for West Ham. You know, that's fun, isn't it? But yeah. Got very little interest in watching reporters outside training grounds.
It's a time-wasting exercise, a little bit like playing Football Manager, isn't it? Following transfer deadline, you're just wasting hours. Just look at, or even watching the draw, staying up late to watch the draw, say in a League Cup or something. What's the point?
What you want to do is just stick the telly on at 10 o'clock tonight and watch it for 15 minutes. And then you have absolutely every little bit of information that you need. And then you can go to bed in the knowledge knowing that nothing ever happens in that last hour, apart from one late fax.
Listener, you can laugh at us if there was some massive transfer that took the world by storm that's happened as we're recording, or maybe just after. And when you hear this, I mentioned that we are powered by Quinbet. How good is this? The guys at Quinbet have enhanced their UK welcome offer, where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It's for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this show. It's really impressive. It's 18 plus, and remember, folks, always gamble responsibly. Right, we will talk about a couple of transfers later. I promise we won't use the phrase "here we go," but next up, we're going to talk news. Loads of managerial movements. I mean, when are they not in the EFL? But this past week, it feels like it's been particularly crazy for that. Let's start with Sabri Lamouchi in at Cardiff. They finally got a replacement for Mark Hudson. It's stylish Sabri, who's the new Bluebirds boss. He says he wants to be there for the long term. Good luck with that. Cardiff, a place and 3 points above the relegation zone. City legend Sol Bamba will be part of the coaching staff. They'll take over a team who haven't won any of their last 9 league games. They are playing tonight as we record at Luton. What did you make of this one, Adrian? We loved his clobber when he was at Forest, and then it all went horribly wrong in a way that still haunts my dreams. But generally, he acquitted himself pretty well in that one season in the Championship.
Yeah, he's a suave guy. He talks well, doesn't he? I think one of the big issues at Cardiff at the moment is that the fans are so fed up. They're just a bit bored, aren't they? They're fed up with the ownership, who seem to have lost a bit of interest. They're a bit confused about the direction of the club and where they're going, what style of football. I think they've wanted to watch better football and they had a taste of it. And then that was taken away when Morrison got fired. There's a bit of a disconnect, I think, between the fans and the team and the club in general. So Lamouchi, I think, is someone that could fix that. He did quite a good job of that at Forest, if memory serves me right. They were the kind of club that kept on hiring and firing, and suddenly, through winning games, but also his personality, seemed to get everyone on board quite quickly. And he would look to do the same at Cardiff. And obviously bringing in Sol Bamba, someone that he worked with the national team, makes sense, doesn't it? Because he's a popular figure. So, yeah, we wish him well. I mean, the football's not that thrilling, is it? It's quite defensive, quite counter-attacking based. But if you're Cardiff at the moment with the players they've got, that's probably the best way to go about things. Be interested to hear Sam's thoughts. I don't think it's going to be thrilling to watch, but he can mend things a little bit, I think.
Yeah. Memory tells me that he's quite pragmatic, isn't he? And I don't think Cardiff need particular help in that regard. I think defensively they've been pretty good, conceded the joint fewest in the bottom half. So it's getting them scoring, which has been the issue throughout. But yeah, if they set up in a counter-attacking style, they've got good pace in the wide positions. I think they've always had that, you know, going back to Warnock's days, really. They've always had kind of flying wingers. They've got that. They just haven't had someone to finish the chances. But in comparison to the appointment we're about to talk about, you can't compare. You know, as you say, Clarkey, I think this is one that will probably get the fans upbeat. It's a bit of a coup. And yeah, no doubt we'll keep them in the division. And we'll see where they go next season.
Do you think, no doubt, he'll keep them in the division? Because I think they've only scored 21 goals, haven't they, Cardiff? They're not exactly been prolific.
I think there's probably four or five worse teams. Yeah, I think he's experienced enough, good enough to get a tune, to get enough points. Play this back.
Yeah, change of the manager, definitely theme in that lower reaches of the championship table. It's happened again at Wigan, who sacked Kolo Touré after he failed to win any of his 9 games in charge, replaced by Sean Maloney, who was part of the Wigan team that won the FA Cup in 2013. Since then, he's coached at Celtic and with the Belgium national team before a brief and unsuccessful spell as boss of Hibs, where he won just 6 of 19 games. Wigan 4 points from safety as we record at the bottom of the championship. Sam, this smacks of doing it on the cheek to me, rather than actually trying to find a candidate to keep him up, because, all right, he's an ex-player, but as I mentioned, it's not like he's got a massive pedigree as a manager.
I don't understand it. It's nice for the fans, isn't it? Returning hero. It's nice for him. He probably...
Is it? You know what? I'm going to cut you off there and say it's not that nice for the fans. And I'm going to use the example of when Stuart Pearce, the greatest player of my generation for Forest, took over as manager, and we knew it wasn't going to go very well, and it didn't, and he got sacked. And then that changes his legacy a little bit. So is it that nice for the fans when somebody gets a hospital pass like this to come in and sully their reputation?
Yeah, I'll take your point. Yeah, maybe I wasn't talking literally, you know, in terms of the football potential that he's going to serve up and their chances of staying in the division, more just seeing him. Hello, Sean. You were good for us once when he turns up on the touchline. It's madness. Yeah, I don't understand it at all. You cannot compare that appointment we just spoke about and even Mick McCarthy. I think we were all kind of in unison that it may just be a short fix for Blackpool, but that's the type of manager you need in when you need a quick return, a quick change in fortunes. I don't understand this. I would presume it'll be a coach, considering his coaching journey so far, who wants to play football in a stylish way. And Wigan have not got the players to do so. They need a manager to come in to make them fight and to get points any way, shape or form. I don't understand it at all. And it's a club that clearly a little bit all over the place right now. They've made a few signings during the window. Who's making those signings? I don't know. But it's going to be very difficult to change their fortunes around. And I don't see them doing it in an expansive way.
I think this is the exact opposite of what Wigan actually needed. I really do. I just think it's going for a former player. When experience is necessary, someone that's got some kind of proven record in the division, I think is what Wigan required. Would Maloney have been interviewed for any other championship job? I don't think so. I really don't think so. He can clearly coach. He's worked at Celtic. He's worked with the Belgian national team. He was a bit of a disaster as a manager at Hibs. The last job I think he was close to getting was Dundee. And they're in the Scottish Championship. I mean, he has lucked out big time here. And I think that Wigan have made a schoolboy error. But look, this is a Wigan ownership that's in a mess. I mean, they've got 3 points deducted, sort of in limbo, suspended, haven't they, at the moment, thanks to 3 late payments to players. They've got to get their house in order, Wigan's ownership. But yeah, this is a bad appointment.
Yeah, and when you're on the third manager of the season, like Wigan and Cardiff are, that tells you that you are embroiled in a relegation scrap, as are, in League One, Forest Green Rovers. This one from the file marked, didn't see that one coming. Duncan Ferguson is their new manager. Started in a pretty heartbreaking way. Defeated Shrewsbury, conceding on 90+4 and 90+8. They're bottom of the league, 4 points from safety. Sam, when you heard about this one, who did you think it was a stranger move for? Forest Green Rovers or Duncan Ferguson?
Forest Green, definitely. Yeah, I think despite the level that he played at, you know, how good he was as a player, Premier League player, he'll still want to, you know, get a go at being a head coach, a number one, and it sometimes takes dropping down a little bit. I would have been even more surprised if Duncan Ferguson would have walked into a big championship job, for example. So, yeah, really surprised that Forest Green have gone down this route. I heard Dale Vince talking about it. It's very, very odd. Very odd. Like, you know, he just wanted a big name, which just doesn't follow on with what they've done at Forest Green the last few years, or, you know, the entirety of their time in the Football League. It just sounds very, very odd. That said, I was, you know, quite quick to say that I think this is going to end in tears, but they've signed eight players and eight decent players at that as well. Bakayoko's come in, Onyango on loan from Everton, who looks like he's got a bit of Ebu Adams about him, playing kind of advanced midfield, number 10. Jordan Garrett scored an outstanding goal at the weekend. Obviously know him from Swansea. These are good players that they've taken. So, and I think he probably will galvanise. He'll probably galvanise the, put a few extra fans in the stands and probably get a little bit of an upturn because of the type of character he is. But, I mean, they are in a bit of a rut right now. I'm going to go a little bit Clarky here. 21 points they've lost from leading positions, which sounds astonishing to me, and 14 goals conceded in the last 10 minutes of games. So it's been a reoccurring theme, and obviously they're going to be really despondent this week after how they lost at Shrewsbury. So he's got a job on his hands straight away. But yeah, having had a little bit of time to think about it, yeah, maybe it gives them a chance.
Yeah, I quite like it, certainly from a neutral point of view, Clarky. I also liked his quotes to the club website when he joined. I'm grateful for the opportunity to come and lead such a progressive and forward-thinking club. Their world-leading green creds are seriously impressive. Doesn't sound like something Duncan Ferguson would say to me. That.
Definitely not. He's had that one spoon-fed, hasn't he?
Was he unveiled on Burns night as well? He definitely had haggis, didn't he?
100%. I know I did. I like haggis, don't you? Do you like haggis?
Oh, love it.
Dale Vince doesn't, I can tell you that much.
That's true. Why do we only have haggis one time a year? I'm all over it. I want to have it more.
I certainly didn't have it once a year when I was living up in Glasgow, Clarky. That was a daily occurrence.
Love it. Yeah, it's a weird fit, but I like it. And I'm full of admiration for Duncan Ferguson taking himself outside of his comfort zone. You know, he's worked at Everton for donkey's years, hasn't he? And he is sort of Mr. Goodison Park. So to sort of rock up in the Cotswolds and take on this job, I think it's bold. It shows how much he wants to be a manager. It shows that the ego isn't too big on his side of things, that he's willing to go a little bit lower in the pyramid to prove himself as a gaffer. And I wish him all the best. He provided me with one of my scariest ever moments as an Arsenal player when Bruce Rioch asked me to stand on his toes at throw-ins, and I literally did stand on his toes because I thought I was scared of both, but I was a little bit more scared of my manager than Duncan Ferguson at the time, naively. So I actually did at throw-ins. I sort of literally stood on his toes, and he went berserk at me on the touchline. What do you think you're doing, you and whatnot? And it was scary. I've forgiven him since, and I kind of think, good luck to you, mate. And he was unlucky, wasn't he? Two goals in injury time cost them a win in his first game. So, yeah, promising signs. I don't think they're going to be that pretty based on what we saw of his football at Everton when he was in caretaker charge. Quite industrial, but he's got personality. And I think, as Sam said, he will galvanise the club and the team.
And his first game at the new lawn is the Ferguson Derby against Peterborough and Darren on Saturday. Just so League Two didn't feel left out in the managerial market, Jody Morris in at Swindon. I say that with the Ron Burgundy style question mark at the end because they still haven't confirmed it. Sam, if you ever need a bit more work, go to your old club and say you'll sort out their social media for them, because goodness me, they are slow on the uptake. But he was pictured at the game against Gillingham on Saturday. We know he's reputation for working with young players. Sam, is he a good fit for a League Two managerial role?
Can understand it, considering the way that Chelsea are going about things. I think the hold-up has just been getting his backroom staff in place. So that it's likely to be announced today, as I understand it. So by the time people are listening to this, it will probably be all confirmed. Yeah, so Swindon is, I don't know how much data is playing a part this season, but the recruitment is definitely pointing towards under-21 players from top academies. So from that point of view, Jody Morris, and if it's led to be Ed Brand, they've worked at that level for a number of years. Jody in his case before he got the opportunity to go to Derby and then back to Chelsea as Frank Lampard's number two. So yeah, they'll know the players. They can probably have a bit of input. And this is a Swindon squad that have been used to playing good football under Ben Garner and Scott Lindsay latterly. So whatever Jody Morris and Ed Brand want the players to do on the training ground in terms of the patterns and the playing through the thirds. This isn't going to come completely out of the blue. So it's not going to be a huge style change. But I think with any appointment like this, there's a risk attached because these guys don't know the level. League Two is very different to coaching, managing in the Premier League, top academies, so on and so forth. And it's a demanding fan base because I would go as far to say that anything but playoffs is failure this year. And it's rare to get a job when things are actually going pretty swimmingly in terms of the league position. So going to be a degree of pressure to continue and anything but playoffs or a real kind of upturn in performance levels until the end of the season will not go down well. So yeah, I think there's a bit of a risk attached to it, but can completely understand it.
Pressure, Clarkey, but another way of looking at it would be to say that it's not often that a manager has the luxury of going to a team that have scored 8 goals in the last 2 games and are in the playoffs. So it's not like he's got to get them firing. They're already doing that.
No, it's quite a nice cushy start for him, isn't it? And he's worked with young players a lot, hasn't he? And Swindon are definitely looking to bring in young, unproven players. Some of them will work, some of them won't. But they're willing to take that risk. They want a good coach that can sort of help to develop these players and put bums on seats through exciting attacking football and then sell them on. I think that's the model at Swindon Town this season. So it does make sense to me. But obviously, it's a gamble, as Sam says, because Jody hasn't been a number one in senior football before. And how's he going to handle the players in the dressing room? How's he going to handle Charlie Austin? That's one for me. I mean, two very big characters there. I mean, do you know Charlie, Sam? Do you know him at all?
A little bit, but yeah, I understand what you mean. It has to be the right fit, doesn't it? I think. There with Charlie, and obviously he'll be thinking about coaching probably in a year or two as well. And yeah, I think a big part of his signing is to improve the younger players, help the front players, so on and so forth. But yeah, if the time comes when Charlie does find himself on the bench or whatever, that could be an interesting dynamic.
Looking forward to seeing how that plays out. Well, as I said, we are recording on the day the transfer window is gently pulled into the closed position. Plenty of deals have happened over the last week and plenty will happen between now and when the window is closed. But I've asked the chaps to pick out a couple that maybe will have passed by in that way that, you know, when you wake up, as Sam says, on the day after transfer deadline day and have a look through and go, oh, he's there. So maybe you didn't spot these ones. Let's see. Adrian, you've gone for, first of all, Dan Barlasser from Rotherham to Middlesbrough. Michael Carrick says, Dan is a player I've had my eye on for a while. We're delighted to bring him in. I think that's a statement that could have been copy and pasted from literally any manager with regards to any transfer in the history of football. It's absolute textbook stuff from Carrick.
Exactly. And Michael, can you define a while? Because you weren't a manager until recently. were you tracking him then? I'm not sure. Maybe he was. Maybe he was studying the Championship in readiness for this gig. Who knows? But yeah, look, Dan Barlasso is a good player. I think he's a good all-rounder, decent passer, will get stuck in, creates goals, a lot of them from set pieces, and chips in with the odd one as well. He's got 7 assists this season, and they called him the Geordie Perlow, didn't they, at the New York Stadium. Now, I've got to say, the New York Stadium hasn't borne witness to that many great footballers. So I have the Rotherham fans over-egged it here by calling him the Geordie Perlow, just because they don't see that many sort of skillful technicians there. Sam, can I throw this back at you before I continue?
You want me to give you a stylish Rotherham midfield player?
Well, have they over-egged it with calling him the Geordie Perlow?
Yeah, I think so. I don't see a lot of Perlow in him.
No.
I see raking crossfield balls. I don't see little, you know, archy, bendy, spinny balls.
Yeah, a little give and goes around the corner. He can do it. But look, first of all, he's got to get in the team, hasn't he? And I think that Johnny Housen and Hayden Hackney have been playing really well for Middlesbrough. So I think it might take him a few weeks to get some action. But look, he's proven at the level. He came through the academy at Newcastle, so he's technically excellent, I think. And yeah, he's going back up to the northeast. He'll strengthen their squad between now and the end of the season. But I don't know if he's going to walk straight into the team and dominate. And also, it's chalk and cheese, the style of football, isn't it, between Rotherham and Middlesbrough. So it might take a little bit of adapting to. But yeah, I like the player, and I think they've got themselves a good one.
Sam, Fleetwood have bolstered their front line fairly substantially. They say they've paid substantial fees for Jaden Stockley and Jack Marriott. That's a bit of a statement of intent from the COD Army.
Absolutely. I mean, I had to double check this morning because I watched Fleetwood relatively recently, but I didn't realise that they'd lost Joe Garner to Carlisle and Callum Morton as well to Salford. I thought that Callum Morton had moved on, but I double checked. So that kind of just left them with that promise on Omachiri, who scored at the weekend, and Gerard Garner, who was on the bench at Sheffield Wednesday, not the beach. So definitely needed to reinforce. And oh, yeah, unbelievable when I saw it, really. The most unbelievable thing is that Jack Marriott is only 28. That's unbelievable, isn't it? He seems like he's been around forever, but he's a brilliant goal scorer. He's got 6 goal involvements and just 9 starts at Peterborough this season. And he had a brilliant end to the championship season last time out. 9 in 16 championship starts he got. So clearly in the right system. I think that's always important with him, because I remember him being such a good impact player at Derby and thinking, why is he not starting more often? But not many managers do trust him from the off. I don't know if it's a fitness issue, if he doesn't give you enough without the ball maybe. But I think if him and Jaden Stockley can be paired and can start fast, you know, they could definitely, you know, fire Fleetwood away from any potential trouble and up the league into mid-table. Because I think they're a well-coached side. I've said that. I've liked the look of Scott Brown's kind of team already this season. And those two in unison, you know, should be a good match. Stockley was captain in Charlton until relatively recently. He clearly didn't fit into Ben Garner's style of play. And Dean Holden sees him further down the pecking order. Now he's got Macaulay Bonn and Miles Leeburn playing really well. So no surprise that he's been allowed to leave, but I think that's a really good pickup for Fleetwood.
Yeah, I agree, actually, just very quickly. I think that Fleetwood, as Sam touched on, are solid. They are well coached. They don't give you much. They don't make that many mistakes. They very rarely get destroyed. The issue, they're always in games. The issue is having match winners, having that ability to maybe score 2 or 3 goals in the game to get all 3 points. These two boys, I think, bring that to the table.
The other one that you've picked out, Clarkie, maybe not the sexiest move with all due respect, but Michael Morrison, Portsmouth to Cambridge. He's gone back to the Abbey Stadium for a second spell to try and stem the tide, because only 2 teams have conceded more than Cambridge in League One. Is he going to help them plug those defensive gaps?
I'm really, really chuffed for Michael Morrison and Cambridge United that they've got this deal done. This is a little bit more personal to me, because Michael went to my school, Castle Manor, and I think we're the only 2 sort of graduates to have played in the professional game, certainly since I was young. So I've always followed his career with interest, and going back to sort of a local club where he started out. He helped Cambridge United back into the EFL out of the National League. He's gone on and had a really good career, I've got to say, and to go back there and help them in their sort of hour of need, I think suits them and it suits him as well. I mean, you got to think, he's played 22 times for Portsmouth this season in League One. He's not washed up. He is 34, but he's been playing at a high level this season. You look across his last 8 seasons, he's never dipped under 20 appearances in the Championship. Only a couple of times has he dipped under 30 Championship appearances in a season across the last 8 years. So he is a pedigree player that I think will make a big difference to Mark Bonner's Cambridge between now and the end of the season. When I saw them in the flesh at Sheffield Wednesday, they were a bit of a mess at the back, looked a bit green, making mistakes. They've had a lot of injuries. So I think he will shore things up nicely. He made his debut at the weekend, goalless draw at Lincoln City. So it's a good start for him and for Cambridge United. So yeah, I really, really hope that he is the difference maker that keeps Cambridge United in League One, because if they stay in League One, it's a great story, because they've got a tiny budget there. And yeah, because they're a bit of a local club for me growing up, I hope they survive.
All right, we'll keep an eye on those guys and see how they get on at their new home. Sorry that we missed that massive move that happened at 22:59 on Tuesday evening. But on the plus side, we're speaking to an actual Championship manager next. Well, joining us now to talk all things Luton Town is the head hatter himself, or manager, as he'd presumably rather be referred to. Rob Edwards is on the pod. Rob, thanks so much for your time today. We know how busy it is for you this time of year. Saturday's game at Grimsby, that was your 9th as manager of Luton. Do you feel like you've settled in? Is this your team by this point, or does that take a bit longer?
Thanks for having me, first of all. Hello, guys. Yeah, I feel it is. Of course, it takes a little bit of time. 9 games, I'm approaching the 11 that I got in the last job, so I'm getting there. yeah, I think we feel pretty at home here now. I think we're quite comfortable in our surroundings. The lads understand what we're wanting, and I feel like it's getting to be our group.
Tell us a little bit about the timeline of getting to Luton, because you mentioned your other job. Once it became clear that Nathan Jones was leaving, is it you or your agent who contacts Luton, or is it vice versa? And did you see this as the perfect job, given that it was going from one kind of playoff contending team in the Championship to another?
I think it was a little bit more of them getting in touch. I think Luton cast the net out and had a real focus on what they were looking for. And obviously then, I was in that mix, and then it was brilliant that, once I knew they were interested to talk, I was obviously very, very keen myself. And the fact that they've been doing so well, obviously last year, and then, up until the point of us arriving as well, it's going to be something I'm really, really interested in. I was really interested in. So, the process is, it's funny when you're out of work, and it was new for me. It was one hand, it was okay, a bit of reflection time, some nice time with the family. But there was also quite a lot going on as well. The Championship's been pretty busy this year. And so, there was one or two conversations that I had, but I'm really happy that I'm now here. And as you say, Luton Town manager, very, very proud for me.
That's an exciting time, Rob, isn't it? I mean, you're knocking on the door of the playoffs. Your former club, Watford, only 2 points ahead of you. You've got two games in hand, and they're seen by many as sort of almost playoff certs. I mean, how are you viewing it now? Is it a target for the players to get the playoffs, or would it still be regarded as a bonus? How does the land lie? Because obviously, you don't have the budget of a club like Watford.
No, we don't. But I think we've got some really good players here, Adrian. So I think the group and Nathan and the other guys obviously achieved something really, really special last year. But we're in a position now where we have to aim for that. And it is what the players demand as well. It's what the players want to do. So, of course, we can't guarantee that, but we've got to have an aim. We've got to have a target. We're in the mix. But as I've said quite a lot as well, there's probably at least 12 other teams that feel they're in the mix as well. It's an exciting season this year.
By the time people listen to this, it might be the close of the transfer window. So I imagine it's going to be a busy few hours for yourself. Thinking a little bit about what's happened with Arsenal chasing after Brighton's Moises Caicedo. They've dug their heels in. They've said no at this stage. Obviously, Nathan came back in for James Bree, didn't he? A Premier League opportunity arrived for him. What was your stance on that? How did you approach it? Because clearly, it's a really difficult one for the player to turn down. Was there an awkward conversation, or was it very smooth?
No, I like to think I'm honest in all these sort of situations. So we try to have real, get it out there and have honest conversations. And I think James and I spoke really openly. I think what was key within that whole situation was, of course, there's a human element. You got a Premier League club, like you said, there's a chance to guarantee Premier League football for one of our players. But it's also got to be right for the football club as well. So, the financial side has got to be right. And also, we've got to make sure that we can bring someone in to replace, if you like, for want of a better word, the outgoing player. So there's obviously a lot of moving parts to that. But I like to think that we'll be quite open, and the player knows that, okay, I understand your situation. And by the way, with someone like James Bree, he loves Luton Town, and it was not something like he was banging on a door, desperate to go. But he recognises also that it was a great opportunity for him. So it was quite a difficult decision for him, believe it or not, as well, because he really enjoyed being here. It's hard for us to be able to let him go. But as long as we were confident that we could bring in someone to come in and do really well, and we've done that with Cody, and then it worked for all parties.
What's your kind of approach to recruitment? You mentioned Cody Drame there, who's coming from Leeds on loan. Are you the kind of just handing a list of names to Mick Harford and saying, "See if you can get me any of these," or are you a bit more hands on in the recruitment process?
It's a team process, Matt. So we've got, we've been having, especially since we've been in, because the window's been approaching, we've been having regular meetings on a weekly basis. There's obviously the group chats that are going around. So everyone is, there's a big team involved in that process, from Gary, CEO, the recruitment team, the coaching staff, and we're all involved in that. And of course, then those guys can get the recruitment team, can get out and watch a lot more players than we can. But we're aware of players that we like as well. But we're always trying to make sure that they fit within our criteria and how we play, how we want to try and progress the team, what's going to help us improve. Does it fit within budget? Because that's really important to us, the football club as well. Talked about this after the game the other day. You know, we're a club that's run very, very well. And, you know, the board will not go. The last thing they want to do, they've been building this club up now for the last 12 years to get to the point that we're in at the moment now. We can't then start going mental and overspending to try and chase something, because we don't want to end up where the club was in the recent history. We can all remember, you know, where this club has been and where they've had to drag themselves back from. So we've got to make sure that everything fits within our budget as well.
When you call up a Premier League team and say, I'd like to take one of your players on loan, because you've worked with the England youth teams, does that give you an advantage? Because they know that you're kind of the mindset whereby you can relate to young players of today, whereas maybe, you know, some older school managers haven't worked with the England under 20s or whatever.
Maybe. And I think, I do think as well, hopefully, and I'm sure we're really confident with Cody Drame. I think, you know, he's a fantastic young player, and we're really confident that he's going to do great for us. And hopefully, if other people see that that's worked, you know, we can work in it for everyone, for him, for his parent club, and for us as well. It might open other elements of recruitment up for us going forward. We do want to sort of try and bring down the average age of the group. We do want to work with, I do want to work with young players, but at the same time, I want to work with the right players. And if someone is 31, 32, and we think he's going to help and improve the group, then I've got no problem with that at all. But I do think that, you know, we want to try and add value in our squad as well. I think that's important for us. And obviously younger players in their early 20s are going to be worth that little bit more money. So, but obviously we want to be able to, we want, in an ideal world, we want them to be our players as well. So we've not done the loan thing too often. I don't think it's something that we want to keep relying on, but I do think if it's the right person, it helps us, and it could work for future recruitment as well, then I think it could be a really good thing.
Rob, I've got a really important question for you. It's a question on everyone's lips. Have you bought the lads a new table tennis table? are you going to bring back the table tennis culture that Nathan Jones wanted to get rid of by burning it?
They've got, at the moment, they've got the old darts culture going on at the moment. I can hear them all down there going downstairs doing it now. So we want the lads to be able to enjoy themselves around the place. And I think we've got a really good environment here where a good mixture of fun, but high standards and hard work as well. And if there's one or two things that keep them here a little bit longer and keep them around, then I don't see any sort of problem with that. But the first and foremost, no, it's minds on football and the important, you know, the job at hand. But you have got to live life and enjoy it as well. That's sort of how I see it.
I like that attitude. Yeah, definitely. I read a piece this morning on The Athletic about Paul Warne and about what was going on at Derby. It was a really, really interesting piece. And it sparked something in my head that I wanted to ask you. He's basically created a win wall at the training ground. Where
I read it last night.
Did you read it?
Yeah. I read the article last night. I've texted him this morning, said I really enjoyed it, actually. It's funny.
Brilliant. He's got a win wall. He's got a clean sheet wall. And also the other thing that I noticed with the piece was that he buys a mug for a player when they score their first goal for him with their face on it. I love that. Do you do any of these quirky things yourself just to get the guys going?
No, I don't really. I was thinking, God, I'm boring compared to Paul. I think, you know, I know he's great. When I met him earlier in the season, and I love listening to him. I think he's so honest, really refreshing, really funny. I love the way he goes about it. And I know we spoke after the game when it was Watford Rotherham, that game, and we spoke afterwards and before. And I really enjoyed his company and I like his outlook on it. And he sort of finds the same stresses that I do, and sort of like he's very honest. Like, I think I'd like to be with the players. So there's maybe little bits of similarities there, but no, I don't do any of that. But I texted him and said, look, it's brilliant to see how well you're doing and congratulations so far and keep it going. So, I really enjoyed that article.
When you were appointed, how quickly did you look at when the Watford game was coming up and how much are you looking forward to that at Kenilworth Road on April Fool's Day as it stands?
Yeah, I was obviously reminded of that probably 100 times within the first 10 minutes of being announced. So I know that's a really big game, really big fixture. Clearly for me at the moment, my focus is on the next game, Cardiff tomorrow night. I know that one's on the horizon, and that's the one everyone's looking forward to. It's a really, really big game, and one one I'm looking forward to, but I'll only enjoy it if we come out on the right end of the result, obviously.
Of course. Rob, we really appreciate your time today. We do always finish with a super difficult question, though, so steel yourself for this. Right, we've got you pegged on the pod as one of the more stylish managers in the EFL in terms of your touchline clubber, but I've rarely seen you wearing a hat. Now, was that a consideration when you decided to manage the Hatters? If I push you to name your favourite hat, are we talking a beanie, you know, a baseball cap? But for reference, Harry Cornick did say when he was on with us last year that he would happily wear a top hat.
Yeah, Corns would be able to pull it off as well. I don't think I'd be able to pull that off. I think if I was going to wear any kind of hat, it'd be a baseball cap, a bit Tony Pulis style with my tracksuit at the moment. I've gone Luton Town, tracksuit, a little bit gritty we are, that's what we're about. So it'd probably be a baseball cap.
I love it. But I was going to say, have you been wearing Club Shop clubber then in recent weeks?
Yeah, because, I have, gone away from me Reese gear. I'll be in what you see me in here, club badge.
Is that been forced upon you, or is this something you've changed?
Completely my decision. You know what I feel comfortable in? I think I just feel it's the right thing with the club that I'm at as well. I think wearing the club badge and being really proud to represent them, that's just how I feel comfortable at the moment.
Love it. Still look better than Nathan Jones in it, to be fair. So, I can say that because I do know him. So.
There you go. When you were teed up for this interview, Rob, by Stu, I bet he told you it was going to be really hard hitting and you were going to get peppered with some really difficult questions. Listen, we really appreciate you talking to us in between one game and ahead of another. We wish you the best of luck at Cardiff tonight as people are listening to this. And good luck for the rest of the season too.
Thank you, guys. Thanks very much.
Many thanks to Rob for giving us his time on such a busy week. Next today, we'll look ahead to some of the weekend's marquee matchups. Well, there's a crunch game at Carrow Road between promotion hopefuls Norwich and Burnley, which kicks off Saturday's championship action. Norwich, while we're talking transfers on this particular pod, Clarkie, have signed somebody called Marquinhos from Arsenal. I'm going to put my cards on the table and say I've literally never heard of this player. So can you tell me something about him?
Yeah, I can tell you a fair bit. He was signed from the Brazilian League in the summer and lit up the game on his Europa League debut. Got to say, he scored a great goal. He made an assist and Arsenal fans were getting very, very excited, thinking, well, we've pulled another Gabriel Martinelli out of the bag, sort of a relatively little known Brazilian teenager comes over and he's going to be sensational. I have to say, he's featured in some of the cup competitions since and not really taken his opportunity. He's not shone as brightly, but he's quick. He's very skillful. You know, he'll beat a man and he's got two good feet. You know, he can deliver crosses, he can score goals. It's just he's not at Arsenal level yet. He needed a move. Mikel Arteta lost a bit of trust in him, didn't really want to bring him off the bench. So this is the ideal scenario for him to go out and prove himself in English football to show that he can handle things. So yeah, I think Norwich supporters should be excited at the prospect of seeing Marquinhos in action. But he is green, he is raw. Definitely rough around the edges, but there's a player there. He's capable of scoring, capable of assisting, and yeah, he'll add to the armoury for sure. And it'll be fascinating to see if David Wagner unleashes him against Burnley in the big game at Carrow Road. That would be some debut for him.
So what's Wagner looking to do then, Adrian? He's obviously not going to get his team score four goals in every game, as he has done in both the games on the road so far. But as Dean Smith found out, you've got to get them onside at Carrow Road, haven't you? Obviously, this is a tough game to do that, but you need to show that you are there to entertain as well as pick up points. Otherwise, the locals will get on your back pretty sharp.
Definitely. Well, four goals in each of the last two away games is a pretty good way of going about it. A few weeks ago, I would have predicted that Norwich might have got smashed by Burnley at Carrow Road. Now I'm not so sure, because I think that if there is an Achilles heel, a weakness with Burnley, it's that they'll take chances, they'll play out from the back. And one thing that Wagner will do is get the team pressing hard, ferociously. And I think that they will really try and get after them in this game. That will get the crowd up. They can force some turnovers inside the opposition half. And as we all know, they've got really good attacking players. Teemu Pukki, you know, he's still one of the best around. So I think this is going to be a good game, quite a close fought match. And I give Norwich a reasonable chance. Burnley, I think the last four championship games, they've only won it by a goal. So they've not been walking oversides. And this will be an examination for them, because I think Carrow Road will be alive. And I think that the fans will make it a good atmosphere.
Narrow wins of late than Sam for Burnley, but they have won their last eight in a row on the league. They've only lost twice all season, though both those came away. Could give a debut to Michael Obafemi here after joining on loan from Swansea. I mean, I'm trying to get you to say that Burnley aren't going to go up in some form or fashion, but it's basically done already, isn't it? They're 20 points ahead of Norwich ahead of this game.
There's a crumb of comfort, though, Matt, in what you just said. I agree. I think they're up. But in their only two away games against top sides, they lost them both at Sheffield United and against Watford. So possibly there's a chance here for Norwich. I think some of it will be determined by how well their fullbacks do. If you remember the return game, it was in October. It was only a 1-0 win for Burnley. Rodriguez scored a penalty after Hanley handballed it. But Zaruri against Aarons was a big mismatch. And last time out, Janulis was taken off, wasn't he, at Coventry, because I think it was Norton Cuffey down the right-hand side. Gave him a real tough time in the first half and actually was replaced by McCallum at half-time. So when you're up against Heller, Benson, Zaruri, whoever it's going to be, especially if Norwich are going to be more expansive, then they need to get a hold of those two positions in particular. And I wouldn't say that Wagner needs a statement win because it's far too early in his tenure, but eight games against top seven teams, Norwich, 1 point away at Sheffield United. So they've been abysmal against the better sides in the Championship. So if they are going to be, you know, in those playoffs, which I anticipate them being, yeah, they need to improve in that regard.
Well, if you fancy a flutter on this with Quinbet, Norwich is 6-4 for the win. The draw is 12-5 and Burnley 7-4 to take all 3 points. So that's a big game at the top of the Championship. What a gem this is, by the way. Sheffield Wednesday against Plymouth. Really looking forward to this in League One. It's the top two in the division. Plymouth top and 3 points clear, but Wednesday have a game in hand. They've also only been beaten in the league at home once all season, and they've signed Aidan Flint on loan from Stoke. Who are you picking for this game, Sam? It's one of those where it's really tricky, A, because of the fixture, but also Wednesday played at the weekend and Plymouth didn't, and I'm never sure whether that gives you an advantage or not.
Oh, well, he shuffled the pack, didn't he? Darren Moore. So I don't think we can read too much into that, because some of the players that have had lots of minutes will have had a well-needed rest. I'm quite conflicted about this because I didn't envisage both of these teams being as strong as they have been. And I probably anticipated them having a bit more patchy form when they are just unrelenting right now. The pair of them, I think the point for Plymouth at Ipswich, not that they wouldn't have been confident before, but I think that just gives such a boost to the group, not only in getting the draw, but the way they played, the way that they were comfortable in sticking to their style and played some really nice possession stuff at the, you know, much fancied Ipswich game. So yeah, it's so difficult to call. Plymouth not lost against anyone in the top 12. Sheffield Wednesday have lost three games against teams in the top seven. So if you're looking here like that, maybe Plymouth could go there and get something. But I would expect it to be probably goals in the game. And I'd probably say a score draw would be where I'd hedge my bets. But I think both teams go with real confidence. Plymouth, I think, will be feeling good about things, the way they've replaced Whittaker with some really interesting signings, Callum Wright and Tyreek Wright. They're in a good place right now, and it's going to be a thrilling encounter.
Clarkie, no one knows better than you that you write off Plymouth at your peril. Does that affect how you're going to call this game?
No, it doesn't. No, I'm going to be objective. And the score I have in my head, and this fits totally with Sam's sort of prediction, is 2-2. Mm. I just see this being a 2-2. Plymouth, they don't win that many on the road. I was looking at it. They've only won 5 of 14 away from home, which for league leaders is quite a low figure, but they just don't get beaten. I think they're only two losses. So they'll be tough to beat. I think that those guys in behind the striker, Finazaz and Tyreek Wright, could have a bit of joy in the game, because if there's a weakness with Sheffield Wednesday, I think it's in central midfield. They don't really have what I call a proper defensive player. Not at the moment anyway. Although George Byers might be back for this one, although he's more of an all-rounder. But I think they might be able to find pockets and holes. The Sheffield Wednesday are quite open. They make the pitch massive, which is great when they have the ball because they've got fantastic attacking players. When they lose the ball, they can be a little bit open. And I think Plymouth have got the individuals like Finazaz to unlock the door. So, yeah, I think it'll be a really good watch. I really do. And obviously the arrival of Aidan Flint's great, but it is, they did lose, they've lost two of their first choice back three. Reece James is out injured as well. So Mark McGuinness is gone. Flint comes in. They're still missing, I think, Reece James for this game. And he's having a great season at left side centre back. So yeah, I think it'll be a draw. But if I was going to pick a winner, I would actually lean towards Argyle here.
I just wanted to mention this because it blew my mind. I thought I knew this, but then when I looked at it, it just is crazy. So Plymouth joint fewest away defeats two. Sheffield Wednesday have only lost once at home. Who's the team in the division with the fewest home defeats?
Oh, I know it. I know who it is. It's Lincoln, isn't it?
Lincoln have not been beaten at home. They've won twice, drawn 11. They're 17th in the home form table, home league table, taking 17 points. Only five teams taken fewer. I mean, that is insane, is it not?
That is crazy. Yeah, yeah. Six wins all season, two of them at home. Not sure you're getting that much value from your season ticket at Sincil Bank.
Yeah, I think if Plymouth are to get a result, they'll rely on Michael Cooper. He's been brilliant again this season. I think he's such a good stopper. And I read the match report, watched the highlights back of the meeting early in the season when Plymouth beat them 2-1 with a last-minute winner from Cosgrove. Cooper was brilliant. And I think that the likes of Gregory and Windass and Smith might keep him on his toes in this game as well. Yeah, I think this is game of the weekend for me.
And if you think it's going to be 2-2, like the boys do, that's 16-1 with Quinbet, the draw priced at 11-4. Now, the standout game in League Two, a huge one in the battle to stay in the Football League, revitalised, goal-laden Gillingham welcoming Crawley to Priestfield. And I was looking at this, Adrian, thinking, well, this feels like a home banker. But then Crawley got their first win under Scott Lindsay and against decent Oppo in Salford at the weekend. So maybe not.
Massively, yeah. I mean, Scott Lindsay had to wait a long time. I think it was 17 days for the first match in charge. He was appointed sort of early to mid-January, and this was his first game, and a great result, 3-2 against Salford. He ripped up the team. That's what I'll say about it. Moved from a back three to 4-4-2. He made five changes, and they did ever so well. So yeah, they'll be lifted going to Gillingham. But wow, what's going on at Gillingham? Suddenly remembered how to score. What a difference three players can make, hey, in forward areas. Tom Nichols, Ollie Hawkins, and Timothy Dieng. Those are the three big signings. And they've all been outstanding, haven't they? Particularly Tom Nichols. I mean, Sam knows all about him. He'll be up for this game, won't he? I mean, having just left Crawley.
He's bound to score, isn't he, Sam?
Yeah, well, him and Dom Telford. Like looking at the stats, I think he only had two in his previous 10 on Telford before this most recent run. Four goals and an assist in his last five. So he's doing what we anticipated happening when he moved to Crawley. Yeah, Tom, three goals and two assists in his three games. Basically what he is, you know, he's probably a better provider, you know, the last few years than he has been a goal scorer. And I think that's fair, you know, probably across his career, other than that purple patch he had at Exeter. He's always, you know, covers so much ground, a bit more like that Paul Mullen for Wrexham without having the clinical edge. So now great to see him bringing some consistency, probably be a little bit of a contrast here in the styles. I'm sure Scott Lindsay in time will want Crawley to play some really nice stuff and Gillingham will know their strengths. I make Gillingham favourites here, but yeah, great first win for Scott Lindsay the other day. Sounded like he went really young, full debut for Rafiq Khalil, right-sided midfield player. Teddy Jenks really good in midfield. Tom Fellows as well on loan from West Brom. So he likes giving young players an opportunity. He's freshening things up there, hanging on a little bit towards the end against Salford, but a really good win for him, first time out. And yeah, what a turnaround at Gillingham. And scrolling through Twitter this morning, linked with some good players. The lad at Chesterfield, Shamanga, who came from Boreham Wood, and he scored like, I've got it in front of me, but it's like 30 in 50 games or something. He is absolutely flying. So that would be a statement if he was to go to League Two, because I think, I'm sure there's League One, maybe even Championship sides that wanted to take him.
Sam, there's an old adage in football that a team is only ever as good as their strikers. I know you're a little bit biased here, having been one yourself. Is it true? And is that why Neil Harris is basically just getting as many good front men in as possible?
I think it maybe doesn't translate the higher you go. I think in the League Two basement battle, it definitely works, doesn't it? Definitely works, yeah. Two good strikers, at that level are going to get you out of trouble. There's no question that Gillingham are going to pull well away from trouble. And that's going to be mainly down to the players that they've brought in. Yeah, I mean, they could have quite easily won at Swindon if it wasn't for Charlie Austin. So I think that backs up your sentiment as well, doesn't it?
Yeah, and just to do so in an Adrian Clarke style, I've got a stat on that as well. Gillingham have scored as many goals, 7, in their last 3 games as they had in the previous 23 in the league. So that's what getting some strikers in can do for you. Gillingham 11-10 for the win here with Quinbet. Crawley 11-4 and the draw is 9-4. All right, we're nearly done for today, but obviously I've got a tweet of the week for the chaps to dissect. This time with a twist, Sam, because it is a transfer-related one. We mentioned Aidan Flint. He has quote-tweeted Sheffield Wednesday's announcement of him arriving on loan from Stoke for the remainder of the season. Flint says, delighted to be back at Hillsborough, ... owl emoji, football emoji, wah-wah, which is W-A-W-A-W. Do either of you know what that stands for? I had to look it up.
W-A-W-A-W.
Yeah.
I thought he was trying to make an owl noise. Yeah, that was my take on it. So, yeah, I'd love you to enlighten me. I've got no idea.
Sam, the good old think about this. He's an acronym enthusiast.
Is it a Sheffield Wednesday song or a Sheffield Wednesday saying?
It's like, a saying for Sheffield Wednesday.
Like the Birmingham Keep Right On type.
Yes.
Right. Give us the first word. We are Wednesday, aren't... Oh, no, I don't know.
It's We're All Wednesday, aren't we?
Oh!
So you nearly got it. I mean, I think that raises the tweet up massively. Delighted to be back at Hillsborough. Obviously, he's just straight from page one of the textbook. Owl emoji, you've got to do that if you play for Sheffield Wednesday. Football emoji, bit superfluous. We know that you're a footballer. But wah-wah at the end, just to get the fans on side. Perfect.
Yeah, without knowing him personally, and I know that the Swindon fans won't thank me for saying this because I think he left in quite acrimonious circumstances, but he seems like a footballer who's got a bit of character, I would say, old Aidan Flint. So, yeah, I'll give him the benefit of the doubt here, give him a little bit of props for producing something a little bit out of the norm. 7.
I admire it. I really, it's good knowledge, good local knowledge, but... You know, being back at Wednesday, trying to make out you're one of their own almost. He had a 4-game loan spell, didn't he, Aidan Flint, before he got injured. It's not like he spent donkey's years there growing up. I've looked it up. He comes from Nottinghamshire, so I doubt if he was an Owls fan as a kid. So he's over-egging it. But you've got to admire it. You've got to make these noises, haven't you? Yeah, just not Owls noises.
Before we go, another mention for the promotion that our friends at Quinbet have got running. They've enhanced their UK welcome offer where you can now get a free bet worth up to £35. It's for new customers that sign up only. You can check out the full terms and conditions at quinbet.com/promotions or use the link provided in the description of this pod. We'll tweet it out as well from our account. It's 18+. Remember, folks, always gamble responsibly. While we're plugging stuff, Clarkie, tell everybody about our various social platforms that we've been inundated upon over the last week.
Oh, we're absolutely killing it on social media. We are officially down with the kids now. Yeah, if you want to see clips of us in action, it's at WhatTheEFL on Instagram and on TikTok, would you believe? You can also follow us on Twitter at EFL What The. We did it a little bit backwards, but that's because Matt did it. Try not to get too confused, but no, lots and lots. Well, getting quite a lot of views on the videos, and it seems to be going down well.
Surely does. We really appreciate you joining us today. Listener, if your podcast platform of choice has a review or rating system, give us a 5 stars if you think we're worth it, or just tell a mate if you think that they'd like the podcast too. We are eternally grateful to Luton for their help in lining up Rob Edwards to come and talk to us. It was great to hear from Rob in today's podcast. Thanks to Sam and to Adrian too for their company. We'll be back with another show next week. Enjoy the football. We'll speak to you soon. Bye for now.